evening, everyone, and welcome to the call. It's so good to be with you this evening. Tuesday night, March 9th. Isn't it amazing? We're a third of the way through the month of March. Great to have you with us, and we'd like to welcome especially the new scholarship winners with the Augmandino Group. I believe we have about 27 of them on the call with us tonight. We welcome all of you to be with us over the next few weeks as we take on these principles of intentionally creating our life tonight, starting with connecting with people. Now, these calls are being recorded and will be placed in your tools section of your intentional creation website. So just go to the website and member login at the bottom of the screen, put in your username and password. That should pull up your tools. On the left-hand side, go down to group coaching, click on that, and the weeks will appear. And just click on this one. It will be up probably within about 24 hours. You'll have an opportunity to listen to it again. For those of you who are with us on the scholarship program, we are so excited you made the decision to pick up these tools and be a part of this process. You will have the opportunity to be with us on Tuesday nights as part of that scholarship, and then you have each been assigned an amazing coach. These are wonderful human beings. I've had the privilege of training and working with them. They've been up to our cabin and spent time together there learning how to read the assessment, and they will sit down with you and walk through your assessment. And then beginning as soon as you schedule the next coaching session, these six qualities of an intentional creator. You've got 8 weeks coming ahead working one-on-one with a personal coach. Today, I'll be teaching the principles, and when you're working with your coach, they will be able to refresh you regarding those principles and then discuss how they apply to you in your personal life. So what a great opportunity over the next 8 weeks to be a part of both the Tuesday night calls and working one-on-one with one of these amazing human beings, these coaches. These coaches are coming to serve you. This is a gift from them to you, and I would ask each one of you to show up for them. You know, when they do your assessment, if you have a good experience, have the courtesy of referring them to other people you know who could appreciate a similar experience. As they serve you, serve them. There's no upsell that comes with the scholarship program. They're not going to ask you for any more money. They're not going to ask you for any more engagements. This is truly a gift to you. And honor them as they honor you, because they are truly excited. We were just up last week at the cabin with five coaches, and I know they were just biting at the bit to make the phone calls and schedule the appointments. So welcome to the program. May this be an experience. For those of you who have been with us for a long time, welcome tonight again. As we discussed last week, this week we're starting going back to basics, starting with quality number one of an intentional creator, connecting with people. Those of you who are coaching with me on a private basis, we're going to go back and review these principles, the basics of these principles. And then when we meet in our coaching sessions, let's dig even deeper. Collectively, all of us on this call, let us make the commitment to really show up here and in our coaching sessions, and let's create miracles in the next 8 weeks. Let's just create miracles in your life. That will require that you show up at a very high level, that you truly implement these principles, that each day you study your scroll that's assigned three times a day. Everyone on the phone, we're all going to do this together. Three times a day. We don't do it just because we have to. We do it so it feeds our soul and reminds us in those pivotal moments of the day, in those little moments when we're making decisions, do I or do I not make that phone call? Do I or do I not complete this task? And we hear the dialogue, sometimes of a sabotaging thought process, and we consciously choose to think differently, feel differently, act differently. And as Og says, in time, we will create a new furrow for a new habit of thinking. And when we do, we'll wake up every morning free of the fear we currently may have when we're awaking. This is going to be an exciting experience, and it will be exciting as you take this on. Now, tonight I'll be sharing with you principles. If we have a few minutes at the end, I want to open this up for questions. Those of you who are coaching, you can ask your coach. For those of you who are on the call who may not yet own these tools, you have a couple of options. Option one, go on your site, click on the offer. At the very bottom of, or very top left-hand side, it says Buy More Tools. Click there, and you can buy the first quality of an intentional creator for $37, and then buy each of the other five as we talk about them for $137 each. That's a total of $722. Or you can do what the scholarship people did. All those who are on the phone, they just bought them all at once for a $225 discount, $497. It doesn't get better than that. So either buy them as we discuss them each week or do them all at once and save yourself a tremendous amount of money. But you're going to want to have these tools in your hand as we go through this process. I did mention this call is being recorded so that you'll be able to come back and visit it often. If you would like to, if there's something that occurs this evening that, would serve you in being able to come back and listen. And in the future, should you miss a call for a reason, something happens that's extremely important, and let us be really important, then you can go back the next day and, catch up and listen to the call. So let us get started. The whole process of intentional creation is basically saying success doesn't just happen. Happiness doesn't just happen. These things are intentionally created. If we want to have a magnificent relationship, we want to intentionally do the things that create a magnificent relationship. If we want to have a successful business, we're going to intentionally do the things that create a successful business. We're going to focus on the millimeters between where we are and where it is we would like it to be, and continually, intentionally, consciously, in creation. That's an intentional creator. The very first thing an intentional creator does is learn how to connect with people. There are few businesses, and certainly no relationships, that you can be free of this mastering this principle, this quality. This is essential. Ogg calls it the greatest secret of success in all ventures. He even tells us that with this alone we can succeed, and without it, that we have all the knowledge and the skills of the world, will fail. It must be really important. And so let us explore the pieces involved. Now, if you're just getting familiar with your tools, if you're a coaching client, and or part of the scholarship program that makes you a coaching client, on the tools section, on the left-hand column, go down to personal coaching and click that. It will open up a series of menus in the middle. Click on connecting with people. That will expand to walls of resistance, empathy, intuition, intrinsic validation, part one, part two, and partnership. That's where we're going to spend the next 2 weeks, is with that information. When you click on one of those, if you're a coaching client, on the right-hand side, there's not only an audio bar, but there is a place where you can download the transcription of that audio and follow along. There's also a place where you can click and download the practicum, something that you can use as a review, questions that you can explore, and some of those we will in fact be visiting tonight. If you're not a coaching client and you're a part of this Tuesday night coaching call, you can access the same information at the top by clicking on six qualities. In the middle, same content, click on connecting with people, then click on the first one, walls of resistance, and you'll see the audio bar and a brief description of what that information is about. So you can get to the audio with either one of them. You are going to want to spend time this week, if you have not already, listening to this audio. If you have access to the transcription, you might want to follow along and take some notes. Now, we have made this available so it's downloadable to an MP3 player. You can download it to your iTunes. You can burn it to a CD. If anybody on the phone has a question about that and you're uncertain how to do it, call the office. Krista or Megan can assist you in doing that, so you know how to learn how to do that. It's relatively easy once you understand it. But you can download that to an MP3 player. I was with someone last week, and they showed me their MP3 player, their iPod. There was all of the audio by section. The whole thing was there. And they could click on it, and they listened to it while they were working out. They listened to it while they're driving in their car. What a great idea to listen to these stories and think about how could this apply to me and start practicing so that when you then are with people, you can do this more effectively. Now, only caveat, this audio is for your ears only. We are trusting you with this copyrighted proprietary information. We would ask you not to share it with anyone else. That's a requirement of having this program. This is for you and for your ears only. We didn't want you to have to be confined to a computer. We wanted you to be free to listen to this material elsewhere. We only ask that you honor the fact that it is copyrighted and proprietary. That's it. Okay, let's go into these principles. Go in the middle section, left-hand side, six qualities and or personal coaching. Open up the middle menu. Click on connecting with people. And it'll open up and click on walls of resistance. This is a great discovery. Dr. Hartman, who created the mathematics we use in the assessment, was nominated for a Nobel Prize. He did a tremendous amount of research in applying these principles to people. He discovered something. He measured that on average, we're just going to have everybody press star 6. I forgot to mention that at the beginning of the program. If everybody just press star 6, and that'll keep our recording clean. If you want to share or ask a question, if there's something that's not clear, just press star 6 again and come right back on the line and say, Dave, 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 and I'll acknowledge you. If I'm not, it's because I can't hear you. So just press star 6 again until I acknowledge you. Thank you for doing that so quickly. But Dr. Hartman discovered that on average, a person in a non-adversarial relationship, that means two friends, hopefully a husband and wife or companions if they're friends, co-workers if they're friends, in a non-adversarial relationship, a person holds back, on average, 40% of their cooperation and productivity until they've been valued as a human being. That's an amazing discovery. What that means is everyone you encounter, even those you love the most, have a wall of resistance, a wall that holds back their cooperation and productivity. Now, you know that you have one too, and the best test is when someone calls you at an inconvenient time trying to sell you something. Some of you make calls too. But how do we respond? How often do we say, just take me off your list and hang up? How often are we kind? How often do we say, oh, I am so happy to hear from you. I wanted to buy one of those. Oh, I'm so glad you called. They do not get our cooperation and our productivity. If we don't know them, the wall they experience in us is often much higher than 40%. Sometimes it's 90 or 100. So it is with us as we go out in the public. With those we love, on average, 40%. With others, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90%. In the past, you may have been tempted to throw up on somebody in your enthusiasm. Blah, blah, blah. So excited about what you're selling or what you're offering or this opportunity you want to talk about or an idea that, or a politics or religion, whatever it is blah, blah, we throw up. And what happens, if you can picture that wall, we throw up on the wall, some of it splashes back, it tastes awful, it's called rejection, it's not personal. It's not about you. It's about their wall. They just have a wall. So the very first principle in connecting with people, mastering this art of connection, is an acknowledgement that everyone has a wall. Now think about this. We're so excited. We want to just talk to them. It's like, get the wall down. Please talk to me. Locke talks about this. He says, muscle can split a shield and even destroy life. But only the unseen power of love, this is called agape love, it's a heightened level of awareness. It's being able to see that wall, being able to see that person, having honor and respect for them. Only that will open up their hearts. Only that will take down their wall. And until I master this art, I'm no more than a peddler in the marketplace. Just think how often we get excited and we throw up and we get that rejection. We feel icky. We just feel icky. Ah, rejected, awful. Sometimes we just turn around and go to the other side of it and throw up on that side and then throw up on the other side and throw up on the other side. Why can't they understand this? It's so simple. It's so logical. It's so valuable. Why can't you get this? Well, they don't get it because they're on the other side of the wall. You're just throwing up on a wall. So how do we get this wall down? We start by acknowledging that it's there. We can't speed up the process, no matter how excited we are. We don't get to shortcut. We don't get to be impatient. Now, this doesn't take long. It can happen relatively quickly and does get faster and faster as we master the art. But there is a wall. To be frustrated with that wall is like being angry that the sun came up too early because we didn't have enough sleep. The sun's going to come up whether we had enough sleep or not. It's just a fact of nature. And so is this wall. It's just a fact of nature. So number two, we acknowledge it's there. The next thing is that we use our empathy and intuition as the tools to take down this wall. Now, our empathy is all of our life experiences. How many on this phone have or are experiencing something very painful in their life? How many are? Isn't it wonderful to know that all of that pain you've been dealing with finally has a purpose? There's a reason for it. This is an opportunity. I'm just turning to Kevin Hall's book, Aspire. There's a quote in here from our program. He says, speaking of empathy, Ogmandino writes, with love, I will tear down the walls of suspicion and hate which they built round their hearts. In this place I will build bridges so that my love may enter their souls. I love that. A close friend and coaching client, Dave Blanchard, CEO of the Ogmandino Group, that's kind of fun, huh? Continues, quote, our character has been forged in the furnace of adversity. We know what pain feels like. Do you know what it feels like? Have you experienced it? We cannot change the past. However, we can choose to use these reference points as a rich resource to better understand, connect, lift, and build others. When we use our life experiences in the service of others, we will finally find purpose in our suffering, joy in our journey, and much-needed healing in our souls. All of the things that have happened to us, especially the most painful, are in fact our greatest asset. They are the lens. Now, this is not in the program. I'm going to give this to you as a reference. You ever seen one of those commercials where they take a polarized lens and they look through it and all of a sudden you can see things clearer? All of our experiences, our empathy, is a lens through which we can more clearly see a person and understand where they are really living, what's really going on in their life. Sometimes the sunlight of success obscures our vision. We can't see. We can't see them. And all of a sudden this polarized lens called empathy comes in. Oh my goodness. That person's in trouble. Oh my goodness. I can feel their pain. That's what empathy does for us. Empathy helps us focus on another person. Now, to do this, we actually have to focus on them. We have to think about another human being. Get outside of our own cocoon. This is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. It's basically this. Everybody's in a cocoon. Everyone. Everybody's living in their own self-centric, self-centered world. Now, there are a few exceptions, but they're very, very few. The person who gets outside of their own cocoon, outside their own wall, and starts showing up for other people, stepping into their world, is a very rare person indeed. Now, when you go to this material and listen, you'll hear a very self-revealing dream that I had about 5 years ago while I was in Chicago. I call it the Chicago dream. I had been tormented by something since I was a little child. I had tried to ignore it, tried to pretend like it didn't happen, just left it alone, let it fester inside my soul. It happened when I was in Chicago, between the ages of 2 and 4. My father was going to school in Chicago. He was going to school all day, working all night. My mother was working all day. It got so difficult. She was raised on a farm, and she's in this high-rise in Chicago. It was such a strange place. We were living down the street from Wrigley Field. It was just a complicated time for them. Well, here it is, years later, 50 years later, I'm in Chicago, and I'm going to speak the next morning, and I'm reflecting on these people that I'm going to talk to, many of whom had self-esteem challenges. I had done assessments on 200 or so of the, I think it was about that, 100 or 200 of the, about 600 or 700 were going to be there. Well, I went to sleep, and I had a very vivid dream. I'll give you a brief overview of it now, and you can read about it and listen in great detail in the program. In this dream, I'm walking down a road, and I'm dragging a sack behind me. It's so big it's dragging on the ground, a big white muslin sack. And I am very aware somehow that everything in this sack, everything I'm ashamed of, everything that's happened to me that hurt, every failure I've ever had, all of those miserable things are in this sack, and I'm dragging them behind me, just taking a tremendous amount of energy. Just pause for a moment and ponder, what's in your sack? If you got a paper and pencil, you might write a couple things down. Was it a job loss? Was there a dissolution of a marriage? Was there the loss of a loved one? Did you have a bankruptcy? Being on your credit? What are you dragging in your sack? What's happened to you? Just imagine that in your sack. And here we are dragging our sacks down this path, and this man starts to approach. And I'm thinking, I want to step into this man's world. And I started reflecting on the principles of intrinsic validation. And then this voice spoke to me, let go of the sack. So I let go of it. Oh, what a relief. And then I was told to turn around and look at it. And I did, reluctantly. Then I was told to empty it out. And the weirdest thing is the sack was full of these round, chrome-like balls with spikes on them. I thought, that's kind of weird. Yeah. Then I was told to pick up the most painful of them all. And I knew which one it was. There I was in Chicago, age 2 to 4. My parents needed help. And this supposedly wonderful couple befriended them. And they were happy to take their two beautiful children off their hands and treat them to wonderful gifts. We got new clothes every week. Christmas, Santa Claus came. It was incredible in the eyes of my parents. What they did not know until years later, those two people were pedophiles. And we had a living hell. I was asked to pick that up. If you were looking at your stack, what's yours? What's the most painful thing that was in your sack? What is it? What happened in your life that just causes such an ache? Either something you did or something that was done to you. What is it? Because I was told to pick it up and then press it into my heart. That seems so strange, especially with the spikes on it. But as I began to press it into my heart began to swell. Something magical was happening. I wasn't feeling the burden from all of that pain. I had certainly sat there and reflected on it. Oh, I felt how awful it was and the repercussions through a lifetime to my self-esteem. But all of a sudden, I was feeling whole. I was asked to do it with the next thing, and the next, and the next, and pretty soon it was all gone. I had a lot of them there on the floor. And when it was all done, I was asked to turn around. And I did. And the man was still standing there. Except this time, I noticed for the first time that he too was dragging a sack. You see, I couldn't see what was going on in his life, that he was in pain until I was willing to own my own life experience, to own it. Now, this isn't about forgiveness. That had been taken care of long before. This is about how we carry our memories. Sometimes people tell us, as I share in the program, to write them all on a rock and go out and throw them out in the ocean. It's been my experience that rock just gets swept right back up on the shore of memory. You don't get to forget. What you get to do is use those feelings and memories as a lens. Remember that polarized lens through which we can see, oh my goodness, he's carrying a sack. Oh, what's going on? And as I focused on him, I could feel from our conversation what was happening in his life. And I could ask him questions based on my own life experience. Wow, do you ever have this experience? Has this ever happened? Things that I would know to ask that no one else would know unless they've been where I have been. Questions you can ask because of where you have been that no one else would know to ask except for someone who's been there. And you can trust when you start practicing these principles, people will be put on your path who are challenged with things very similar to yours because you know the questions to ask. Your intuition will inspire you. You'll ask based on your own life experience and you'll watch that person begin to open up. They will know that you know where they are and you didn't need to fix them. They finally feel valued as a human being, and in so doing, their walls of resistance will come crashing down and conversation and connection can occur. That's why empathy. So ponder this week as you study this material. What's happened in your life? In what way have you been uniquely prepared for this moment in time? One quick story. I was sitting here up at my home office tonight. I was sitting at this desk about a year ago. And a name came to my mind. An exercise we'll be talking about in 2 weeks. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. Starting the morning that way, this name kept coming to my mind. I finally in the afternoon called. Hi, this is Dave. How you doing? Oh, I'm doing great. Then why have you been on my heart all day long? And there was silence. He finally said, do you really want to know? And I said, I'm here to serve. And he told me the most sad story I have ever heard. Oh, parts of it I knew. The financial pieces I understood. Enough so that when he got done, my intuition and empathy said there's only one question to ask. I knew why God had put him on my path, why I had been inspired to call him. That power that governs abundance, that higher power I call God, knew that I would ask that question. And I simply asked, how seriously are you considering suicide? Silence again, and then a tearful response. That's all I've been thinking about. Well, that conversation put lots of things into motion. The universe showed up in so many ways for every facet of his problem. A year later, miracles. Miracles. All of that's behind him. He says, I'm more joyful than I've ever been in my life. Now, I'm not taking any credit for anything other than having heard the prompting, stepping into his world, listening. The power was in the silence. Asking the question my intuition prompted me to ask. Empathy from my own experience of losing everything financially and spending 10 years paying back $1 million in debt. And the beginning of that reaching a point of such desperation, I believed my life insurance policy was the answer. I knew that dark night he talked about, and so could ask the question, in what way have you been uniquely prepared for this moment in time? Who is going to be put on your path? Who are you going to be impressed to call and talk to? You will cherish, retrospectively, your life experiences. You will not want to go back and relive them, but you'll be deeply grateful for them. Because using them as reference points, you'll be able to serve people deeply, richly. So walls of resistance, we all have them. Listen to that piece. Empathy, intuition, listen to this piece. Spend some time asking yourself those questions. What's in my sack? What have I been dragging around? Have I been a victim? Is it a woe is me? Am I ready to finally start focusing on other people, to start exercising the greatest secret of success in all ventures? How could all of this experience assist me in better seeing what someone else is experiencing? And could I actually find joy in doing this? Be a victor instead of a victim? Oh, I tell you, you can. Now, let's step into the principles for how to use your empathy and intuition. How to take down these walls of resistance. Pull out a paper and pencil so you can take some notes. The very first step is to notice other human beings. We think we do, but most of us do in relationship to us. What do they think about us? How do they think? What do they think about our car, or our hair, or our clothes, or the way I speak? Well, first of all, we'd be less concerned about what other people think about us if we knew how little they actually do. They just don't. Everybody's focused on themselves. Not everybody, but almost everybody. We're going to start noticing people. And we're going to start this week by noticing what is important to people. What's important to them? Now, I've got some stories in here for you to consider. I tell a story that we relived this last weekend up at the cabin with our coaches sitting there talking. It's just right down there, right in that room. They were sitting right in that chair. When I asked one of the participants in a couples retreat to share with us more about the tattoos that were on his forearm. We also knew they were on his chest and on his back because he'd been in the jacuzzi. Three big crosses in each one of those locations. he was so quiet and so shy. He hadn't said 5 or 10 words in a day and a half or two. And he lit up. And he said, "All I wanted since I was a child is to join the Marines and get a tattoo." That was all he wanted. When he turned 18, he joined the Marines, got trained as a mortarman, and they're ready to send him over to Iraq. This is back in the heavy fighting in Fallujah during that time frame. He said, "I went into a tattoo parlor, and with the index finger of his left hand on his right forearm, he said, as he made the sign of the cross 3 times, 'Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost,' touching it gently. I wanted them close to me, guarding my chest, my heart, and protecting my back." We're starting to get kind of choked up as we're listening to him tell this story. Then he goes, and he's in the Battle of Fallujah. It's awful. He said there was the smell of death in every breath. Oh, yuck. Well, he comes home, and he's only home for 9 months, and they're sending him back over again. He said, "I went back to the tattoo parlor and had him reinforce them," as he did the sign of the cross on those 3 crosses. Those meant a tremendous amount to him. And here's the secret. I'm not crazy about tattoos. No offense to anybody on the phone who has one. I just don't have one. I don't really want one. I don't care about them. They don't do anything for me. But in the first principle of intrinsic validation, it is not about me. Can I see what's important to him? If you've got a companion, can you see what's important to her or to him? If you've got children, can you see what's important to them? If you've got partners and coworkers or people in your organization, can you see what's important to them? There's several other examples in there for you to listen to. But let us start focusing this week on what's important to other people, even if it's not important to us. I've had some wonderful occasions around tattoos since then. Ramona and some of our children are going from a restaurant to the conference center here in Salt Lake for a big concert one night. We took a taxi cab to get there. We thought faster, it ended up taking longer. But the taxi cab driver had her right arm up on the top of the steering wheel, and she had a big tattoo right on the top of her wrist. And so I asked her, "Tell me about your tattoo." She lit up. She said, "I'm from West Virginia. My brother and I are joined at the hip. I'm out here and he's there." And then she started pointing to the points in the tattoo and why they were meaningful and represented her brother. "This represents this, this represents this." Then she touched it with her left hand and said, "This way my brother is with me every day." Wow! Is that important to her? Can we see what's important to another person? Can we notice the good they're doing, even if they're supposed to do it? That's their task. That's their job. That's what they're getting paid for. But can we see how important it is for them to be acknowledged for doing a good job? Can we see it? That's the very first principle. Now, we divided up the difference between seeing it and actually verbalizing it. Principle two is actually speaking it. And the reason why we did this is because so often we see more than we say. As you begin this process, you're going to become more and more aware of everyone around you. "Oh, that's a cool necklace. Wow, what a wonderful haircut. Ooh, nice shoes. Oh, that car. It's 10 years old. I wouldn't really care to own it. But this guy, he just bought it. I can see the temporary sticker on it. Can I see how important it is to him? I'm not acting. I'm not faking, because this isn't about me. Can I see how important that car is to him? Ah, you got a new car. And what were you driving before? What do you like best about this one?" This is the greatest way to start what is often called, and many on the phone will understand this phrase, a three-way. It's going to be a 3-foot rule. A 3-foot rule. other words, when you come within 3 feet of someone, you connect. Well, the very best way to connect is not to bring an agenda that you want to sell them on something, share your opinions, your ideas, get their information. That's not the way to do it. 3 foot. Notice what's important to them. Say something. Step into their world. Invariably, they will say to you, what do you do? And you have a very natural and wonderful conversation about what you do. So let's start by looking for what's important to people. After we've looked for what's important, we verbalize it. We actually say something. Now, it's going to feel awkward for some. Some of you are going to feel kind of weird. You know, like, am I faking this? No, it's not faking. It's not acting. It's awareness. You are finally seeing another human being and what's important to them. They're not plugged in. They're not a robot. They've got a life. Can we see that life? Oh, and you watch what happens when you step into their world and you show up for them. So those are the first two. These are like the beginning level. This gets us out of our cocoon. This gets us focusing on other people. We start noticing people. Then we're going to move into principle number three. So practice one and two a lot. See what happens. Then you're going to start with principle number three. This is starting a graduate level of mastering connection, being a master connector. It's called listening for doors and stepping into someone's world. Listening for doors. Now, let me share with you what a door is. Human beings are very interesting. We have a tendency to, most of the time it's subconscious. We're not even aware we're doing it. We send out little verbal hints about something in our life. You know, if we sprained an ankle and we're not limping, we probably will say something about something that happened to us. Just send it out to see if anybody even notices or cares. If we didn't sleep very well last night, we'll say something about being tired. We want people to focus on what we're focusing on, us, my life, what's happening to me. If we're having a bad day in business, we may grump and grumble a little bit. All of those things are doors into what's going on inside me. The most powerful door is a caustic, hurtful statement. Who in the heck do you think you are? What are you doing taking that class? You spent $497 for what? Anybody had somebody throw one of those arrows at them? You're studying Scroll 2 this week, three times a day, and there's a reason for it. Because Og says, how will I react to the actions of others? With love? For just as my love is my weapon to open the hearts of men, this heightened level of awareness I'm talking about, love is also my shield to repulse the arrows of hate and the spears of anger. We get one of those hurtful comments. Almost everyone on this phone has at least once reacted and thrown it back, pulled out the heart, tip it with a little poison, and send it back, and with a postscript, and that's the end of it. Well, that person just picks it up, poisons the tip, and throws it back at us, and if they're really good at it, they'll hit our heart. So we pull it out of our heart, tip it with poison, and every time the spear gets bigger and bigger and bigger until someone finally gets hurt. We are now going to learn how to catch those spears and turn them into the softest of rain. And instead of being angry and justifying and defending, we're simply going to say, well, share with me what you're thinking. Help me understand better why this makes you so angry. What happened that created this? It's not about us. It it never was about us. People get really angry, and we almost always find out it was about something else. Something else. Or if it is about us, it might be something we want to change. The most powerful doors into what someone is thinking, which we want to have them know that we know where they are, and we didn't need to fix them, we didn't need to defend, we didn't need to justify. That's what takes the wall down. You want the wall down? Then don't react to the caustic comment. Share with me what you're thinking. Help me understand. And then step in and listen. The power's in the silence. It's disarming. And they'll begin to tell a story or something. Listen for the next door, the next verbal hint about what's going on behind that statement. A little deeper. Well, do you ever feel this way when you're in that space? Does this ever happen to you? Things that happen to you when you're there. You know the question. Because you're paying attention to them. You actually are listening. Intently listening. And as you're listening, the walls continue to come down. And pretty soon, here's the solution, not the solution, the summary. You have become a safe place. A safe place. I want you to vision a down pillow in which they can lay their anger and frustration in. To be safe that you're not going to lash back. You're not going to try to defend and justify. You're not going to try to fix. You are there to love and serve them and honor their right to be on this planet with their ideas and their opinions, even if you don't agree with them. That's intrinsic validation. We can't get here unless we first notice people. We won't notice them and pay attention unless we really realize they have a wall. Everybody's got one. We're going to take it down with empathy and intuition. We're going to start by noticing them, what's important to them. Then we're going to verbalize it. Then we're going to start listening for doors. Little verbal hints. I'm tired. I don't like my teacher. How many parents say to a child, oh, but there's 30 students in the class. I'm sure she's really busy. What would happen if we said, share with me your experience? What happened next? Well, what were you thinking after that? What was going on? Were you feeling sad or were you feeling discouraged? Oh, my goodness. What can I do to serve you? Sometimes it's just listening. And most of the time, people will solve their own problems. I was having a coaching session with a client last week. This is an amazing human being. When we started coaching, he was a tough guy. Oh, is he tough. With his addictions, he had lost his wife and his small daughter. He was in recovery. And we began talking and teaching these principles. He ate them up and began to live them. As Og says, when I meet somebody, what will I do? Silently to myself, I will say, I love you. He actually started doing that. He started stepping into his clients who would have problems. Instead of defending and justifying, he said one day, it's amazing what you do when you go in and hear their pain instead of trying to justify your position. I thought that was an interesting comment. He's actually taking this on. Then I got the news 2 weeks ago that he and his ex-wife are now dating again and talking about putting their little family back together. And he said this to me, Dave, I was having a conversation with her Sunday night, and I couldn't believe it was coming out of my mouth. But we were talking, and she says, what do you think I should do? And I actually said it. Would you like me to give you advice, or would you prefer that I just listen? She started crying. She knew had a different man. This is the one she fell in love with. This is the one she wants to be with. Because she did, just wanting to listen. As he did, she solved her own problem. We didn't need to fix it. Quite often, intrinsic validation will have nothing with providing a solution. No great advice, just the power of silence, leaning into and truly listening. That's the power. So as you practice looking for what's important to people, there'll be times when you'll absolutely be stumped. You won't know what to say, because we're just not used to looking. Keep digging. Og says, I will dig for compliments instead of scratching for gossip. You might have to dig. Dig! Find it. Verbalize it. Then start listening for doors. There could come a time in the next week, if you're listening. I probably share this in this audio program. I have a couple of times. I talk about it's the avocado tree. We had avocado trees in our house in California. And you get underneath the tree to try to find an avocado, and you couldn't see one. Then when you finally see one, you see them everywhere. There's hundreds of them. When you hear a door, you actually hear one, especially a caustic one, and you don't react to it, you just step into their world, well, share with me what you're thinking. No energy around it. Disarming. Once you hear that kind of a door, you will hear them everywhere. All day long. And when you start hearing them, especially if it's in someone else's conversation, notice how seldom, if ever, anyone ever acknowledges a door. Oh, I'm tired. Yeah, me too. Yeah, I went to Fiji scuba diving. Oh, yeah, I went to the Caribbean scuba diving. Off they go on their story. Everybody's telling their stories. Hardly anyone is listening. The listener is the most interesting person. The listener is the one who takes down walls. And when the walls come down, all of that cooperation and productivity that's been dammed back, on average 40% non-adversarial relationship, 60, 70, 80, 90% with others, all of that comes flooding out to you. You're the beneficiary. You'll never want to talk again. You'll always want to listen. That's where you win. Og says, I'll use this as my greatest weapon, and none on whom I call can defend against its force. He says, my reasoning they may counter, my speech they may distrust, my apparel they may disapprove, my face they may reject, and even my bargains may cause them suspicion. Yet my love, this heightened level of awareness, listening, stepping into their world, will melt all hearts like into the sun his rays, soften the coldest clay. And that brings us to the last and great blessing that comes from this process. Now, next week, you're going to listen to Intrinsic Validation Part 2 in preparation for our session. I'm going to take you into getting the walls down, trying on their dream, timing, getting agreement, and sharing those things you would like to share that are appropriate. Some may call it, how do you close? I'll show you. It'd be a fun discussion. But for the last great blessing for taking this on, when we focus on another human being, by the way, Intrinsic Validation Part 2 and Partnership, you want to listen to both of those. We're now in partnership with a power greater than us. Its mission is to bring abundance to the lives of others. We have now joined in that mission. We're now in that place. As we truly listen to someone, and that wall comes down and we connect with them, something awakens inside of us. We remember. It just happens. You'll feel it. You will remember your own divine nature. You'll remember your own divine nature. And and it will begin to heal your self-esteem. When you listen to the Chicago Dream, please take note that after I saw the sack and stepped into his world and began to ask questions, the last thing I say in the dream is, and my soul began to heal. This is one of the great ways to heal self-esteem, to practice these principles of intrinsic validation. Now, Scott Irwin, our board member, Love Scott, will be talking, I think it's tomorrow night. Scott, 6 years ago when we started coaching together, and I shared these principles with him, he ended the night with, how many people know this? And I said, there's a few. He said, could we keep it to ourselves? He's told us since, I have made and saved millions of dollars using these principles. And he told me not too long ago that he's right now managing, he owns the largest used pipe company in the United States, Apex Pipe down in Houston, Texas. He says, I'm managing numerous pipelines with crusty old cowboys using the principles of intrinsic validation. He's not manipulating them. He's actually caring about them, noticing them, seeing what's important to them, verbalizing it, listening for doors, stepping into their world. He's actually just practicing these principles, and it's worth millions to him. Well, we have about 3 minutes before we turn you loose to start listening to Intrinsic Validation Part 2 in partnership and practicing these first three principles. Does anyone have any questions they'd like to ask before we wrap up this session? You might be on mute. If you are, just come off of mute. Okay, well, the very first thing we want to do next week,
yeah,
I'm going to open up the call at the beginning for you to share experiences that you're having stepping into someone's world and what's happening so far. What challenges you're bumping into? Please participate, because I can promise you that when you share a question, it serves everyone on the call. Now, did I hear someone's voice coming on?
Yeah, this is Liz.
Hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm great. I started the scrolls a while back, and then I got to like six. And I stopped reading. Where should I start again?
Okay. I'm going to give you two answers. For the next 8 weeks, I want you reading this specific scroll that will support what you're learning. As we're working on connecting with people, we're going to study scroll number 2, I'll greet this day with love in my heart. You want to study that one 3 times a day for this week and for the next week after that. Then we're going to shift to some other scrolls. When we get done with this process, pick up where you left off.
Okay, and do I listen to them on my iPod or do I read them?
What's fun is back in 1968 when Ogg wrote this, there were only 8 tracks. There wasn't even a cassette you could record. And so he said, you know, you read them silently 2 times and then read them aloud the third. We find some people actually absorb them better by listening. So the question would be, what's your best learning style, reading or listening? And do the best one, whichever one works best for you. There aren't any scroll police, so there's not a right or wrong way. There's just, I think, more than a recommendation to do it 3 times a day in the morning to get the right frame of mind, at noon to remind us before life just washes over us like a tsunami, and just before we go to bed, so it sits on our unconscious mind while we're sleeping. That is a marvelous formula. Whether you read it or listen to it depends on what works best for you. Okay?
Thank you.
And you go back to 6 and start over. No, you don't start over at 1, because you keep starting over. Finish. And the fun thing is, when you're doing it for the 10th time, are you with me now?
Yeah.
When you're going through them for the 10th time.
That's when you memorize them, right?
Well, you don't memorize. I know some phrases by memory. But I can tell you right now, Liz, I was recording Unveiling the Secrets in the Ten Scrolls. That's when you go in your tools, the very top one is the Ten Scrolls. You click on that. You click on Scroll 2. The very first audio bar is Unveiling the Secrets in the Ten Scrolls. I spent about an hour helping you understand the scroll so that you can use it more effectively in your study. Well, I was sitting here, I was recording Unveiling the Secrets on the third scroll when I heard something I had never heard before. Now, if I've been through this 10 times, how many? That's 300 times through a scroll. Do you think I know the scroll by now, Liz? You would think so. However, I read this line, the prizes of life are at the end of each journey. Then it hit me, each journey, not near the beginning. I'm thinking, as I read this before, and it's not given me how many steps are necessary in order to reach my goal. Failure I may encounter, the thousand steps, I'm thinking it's going to take 10 years. No, there's a prize at the end of each journey, and each day can be a journey. Each task can be a journey. A sense of accomplishment can come at the end of a task. Each journey. I just had this wake-up call. I just saw this scroll so different. And I've been through it 300 times. Yeah, don't worry. It won't be your last time going through, so pick it up at 6. Next time, don't quit.
Thank you.
You got it? Okay, thanks. Anyone else before we wrap up tonight?
Other than a huge, huge virtual hug and thank you for being a blessing in my life. It's Alexandra.
Hi, Alexandra. How you doing tonight?
I'm fabulous. Thank you.
You're
thanks
so welcome.
To you.
I almost cried after our coaching session yesterday. I was hoping I wasn't too hard on you.
Oh, God. You are, words leave me, but just thank you. You have such an amazing place in my heart, and I feel like I can speak for everybody on this call. I don't know. You just have something incredibly valuable to offer to people and to the world, Dave. I'm so blessed.
Well, I'm blessed to have you as a friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's all take Alexandra's comment and pour it into faithfully studying the scroll 3 times a day. Really do this. Really. Listen. Look for things that are important to people and verbalize them. Listen for those doors. Actually do that this week. Make that decision through the week. And then let's come back and celebrate together next week our progress. And then let me share with you the next step. So everybody have a great week. Take this on and we'll...
Hello, Dave?
Yes?
Huh? Sorry about that.
It's okay.
So this is Bill Henderson.
Hi, Bill.
I had a question. I'm working in, I just opened up a company, and I do pest control. And I go door to door quite a bit. And how would you enter into someone's world when you only have a split second of time to talk to them when you meet them at the door?
That is a great question. You're already dealing with a natural wall of resistance, are you not?
I am.
You might try a little humor. When you are first stepping into someone's world, there are times when we need to do a little knock on the door. Not always are they going to give us a door. They're not going to say something to us other than, you're back, bam, door slammed, okay? We want to do a little knock on the door. Just like we knock on the outside of the door, ring the doorbell for them to come. When they come, let's knock on their wall of resistance. What's the funniest thing you could say to someone if you showed up?
Gosh. Good question.
You might think about it. Now, you'll learn an exercise called mental rehearsal here in a couple of weeks. I was just mentally rehearsing you standing at the front of the door, and I would get a hat, a really fun hat with a bug on it. And I would say, hi, I'm so-and-so with such-and-such pest control. I'm here to bug you. And say it with a smile. You just might disarm them enough to have a conversation.
great idea.
Humor is a great door opener. Okay? I might try that this week and see what happens.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a great week, everyone. We will see you next Tuesday, same time, same place. Take this on, have some fun with it, and those of you who are in coaching, have a great time with your coach this week. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Thank you.